This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking about Megalopolis.
Wow. I remember reading this book about these films that were supposed to be made, but they didn't get made. They got cancelled. And I believe Megalopolis was mentioned in that book. But now it's been turned into reality. Francis Ford Coppola produced this movie. He even sold his wine company.
Not the wine. Oh, God.
And this budget was $120 million, which is insane to have so much money. And this film had such a stacked cast. And I was kind of getting promised about what this movie is going to be. I was really unsure going in, like, okay, what am I expecting? Because I heard about the reviews, I heard about what's going on, and I even been reading the interview from Sight and Sound with Francis Ford Coppola. So this film, it was an epic mess.
Yeah, no, it's a really odd production because I think this film was pretty much in production since the 80s. So it's been basically 40 years, and this whole year it's been such a massive release and such a big thing that everyone has been anticipating. And as you said, essentially self-financed. It's just so crazy that this film even got made and even is here for us to talk about. And over the last few days, we had quite the cinema trip, didn't we, John?
Yeah, we watched 6 movies in 2 days, which is insane. We watched The Critic, The Substance. That was fantastic. I loved that. Please go see The Substance. Oh, great movie. And then we watched Lee, and then we watched Speak No Evil. And then on day 2, we watched 2 more films, Hellboy, The Crooked Man, and then we watched Megalopolis.
Yeah.
A way to finish our movie marathon, essentially. It was insane just to finish this off with this. It ended with a bang.
It's a strange one because we watched all these films and we were very much like, okay, what do we talk about on the pod? And I think really the one that we had the most positive to say was absolutely The Substance. Such a great film. Yeah. I won't be surprised if that shows up on our best of the year video. But Megalopolis was such a fascinating creature. It was such a brilliant thing. Such a mess, but also it has such vision and such ambition. And I just sat there the whole time watching it being like, wow, there's so much in this that I kind of admired and so much that I just thought was dreadful. It's a film that really feels like a product of an auteur who really wants to prove something and really wants to bring this vision to life after 40 years, but doesn't quite get there. There are moments in this film that I think they really succeed. And, you know, you might be listening to this and thinking to yourself, what is Megalopolis? What is this film? You've heard so much about it. Everyone's been talking about it. There's been so many scandals and so many controversies and also just people shitting on this film. Basically, this is about the building of an empire. The film is set in 21st century in New Rome, which is essentially New York. And it's basically about this guy, very appropriately named Caesar, who is trying to create his perfect utopia, his megalopolis. And he is kind of battling against all these different forces. I mean, like the mayor and the head of the bank and the head of the bank's son and a power hungry journalist and all these people who want to keep the city how it is. And it's all about how one empire must fall for another the one to rise. And that's such a cool concept, and I think that you can go so many places with this. And my God, does this film go so many places.
It gives us so many directions and gives us different storylines. I was worried about, is this going to be Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire? How are they giving us so many things all at once? Megalopolis, which is interesting, was inspired by Roman epics, and he was interested in New York and looking at how America was actually trying to be like Rome. And he's like, if you go in New York, you can actually see it's looked like a Roman movie, which is interesting, like how he frames all the cinematography. And it looks like this fighting ground, essentially, people trying to build an empire, trying to build up a city. And you can see that in the Madison Square Garden scene as well, where people are still riding on horse carriages, but racing as well and fighting. So it's very reflective in our society today, how there's sports, there's racing. I think that's intriguing how he thought about that like years and years ago. But also the impact that we had today. I wonder if the technology impacted his work, because maybe that impacted the storytelling aspect of it, because maybe that gave us so many directions, but it failed to wrap up some of the story. It just felt like a loose end to me. I thought the concepts were interesting at the start. That gave me a promise of like, okay, let's see where it takes us, but it doesn't exactly take us where we want to go. It felt like you were stuck on the LA freeway trying to get out, but there was no way of getting out. You just stuck there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point in the middle where they're at this coliseum, and as you say, there's sports and there's fighting, and you're basically just watching the rich, you know, the upper classes and the 1% all living their extravagant lifestyles and just being like, yes, more fighting, more sports, more, yeah, like, you know. And Adam Driver's character, who is the architect of Megalopolis, is going on a crazy drug trip, and that very much was the moment that I thought to myself, oh, I actually love this. This is brilliant. This is so much to say about the class divide. And it's such a brilliant extension of that idea of indulgences of the rich. It's such a great over-exaggeration of that concept. And I thought that was really, really great. And then we kind of barrel into something completely different, and the film takes this mad turn and keeps on just going at a breakneck speed until the end, that I go from saying, oh, I loved this, to like, what is going on? Because everything is just exploding. Like, it's such a strange film because you feel like it really begins to get its groove as it starts, but then as it ends, it feels like it completely loses its groove and just kind of starts to free fall. A lot of it's very Shakespearean, I found.
Yeah, it felt very Shakespearean in terms of like it's playing the dramatic. I want to say something about the direction of the actors as well in some scenes that felt completely random. For example, you'll see that clip going around on Twitter.
In the club.
In the club. You'll see that numerous times in the movie, which is bizarre. It just didn't really reflect the character that well. He had interesting powers, but how did he get these powers over time? And what the movie's trying to emphasize is power, trying to emphasize a utopia, and how do we not make a dystopia for someone else? But then again, is the idea of Kathleen have this power, this time traveling power that you can stop time? But the movie doesn't.
I did not expect that. I've seen the trailer quite a few times, and I did not expect that a big part of this film would be time stopping powers. It's like, hold on, what are we saying here? The acting is a really interesting one because it felt like two sides of a coin. On the one hand, you've got these powerful, amazing actors, Adam Drivers and your Natalie Emanuels and your Aubrey Plazas. And I think Giancarlo Esposito was fantastic. He also was great. You know, Catherine Hunter, I love seeing her. And they have such incredible screen presence. But then there were just quite a few actors who were just bumbling about. And every time they showed up, it was like, oh, you're here. Shia LaBeouf, every time he came around. Like, in the beginning, he just dances around. He has a little fun time. And then he leaves. And it's not until the end that he actually becomes somewhat of a threat. But it's such an interesting character to watch because it's like he's just skipped onto stage and it's like, oh, it's not my scene yet, and then leaves. And you also have John Voight, who the point of his character is very much that, you know, he's an old man who doesn't really have a grasp on his own power anymore. But my God, it just looks like they have just pushed John Voight on set without any prep. And they're like, all right, say this. And he's just like, wow, Platinum. And maybe the oddest one of all is Dustin Hoffman, who is just in like five scenes where he's just in the background going, oh, this is a bit weird, isn't it? And then, like, spoilers, I guess. And then he just dies off screen. And they're like, yeah, he died. And we have a statue of him. And it's like, sorry, what? I'm so confused as to why put all these characters in? Why build all these different layers if you're just going to throw some of them out? If you don't really know what to do with some of these characters until they become relevant, like Shia LaBeouf's character, what is even the point of using them when you've got so much already going on in this film? You know, it's compact. There's a lot that we're doing here. So, like,
Do you think Francis Ford Coppola was like, hey, guys, I've got a passion project. Would you like to be in it for a few seconds or something? Because it definitely felt like they were using the actors for a short amount of time. But also, it was so long in production that Coppola actually thought about actors beforehand to put in this movie. But I think cancellations or maybe to postpone the movie. That's an interesting side of the actors of like, which one did you want to use? And then Adam Driver. That's an interesting choice to have Adam Driver for this movie as the main protagonist. But then again, he doesn't really become the main protagonist after the midpoint in the movie. He just becomes a secondary character. It felt like that because I was like, oh, we're not going to explore any more of him, because it was focusing on the American politics of the movie. It just felt like there was so many storylines that was coming. And also, why a satellite just crashed down onto Earth? It did have an impact on the story, but it did not really open up anything to understand about the characters. It was very random. Obviously, they were foreshadowing that early on in the movie about some satellite that was orbiting around Earth, but this one just crash landed on Earth, and again, it's very random. It just didn't make any sense. There wasn't really enough explanations. That's what the movies does. It doesn't give you any explanation whatsoever. For example, what was that thing that Adam Driver's character was trying to use throughout the movie?
Yeah,
like there was
oh,
technology
yeah.
stuff
yeah.
and it was like, give us more world building to understand what is exactly going on.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's not like an established part of the world. This material is new to everyone apart from Adam Driver's character, and he is very much, you know, to your point about the protagonist, he is the closest thing that you would have to a conventional protagonist. But also, in the first half of the film, we have Natalie Emmanuel's character, Julia, who is very much the point of view for the audience. She's very much the way that we see this world. But there's never a point when she's like, hey, what's this thing that you got here? What's this material? Can we explain that? No, like, she, on one hand, is supposed to be this kind of way for us to look into everything, but on the other hand, they really don't go into that. And that's really strange and really confusing. What's so strange about her character as well is that she completely disappears, essentially. She becomes so insignificant to the plot, which is really frustrating because she just gets reduced to essentially just a mother. That's what she is. She's Adam Driver's love interest. She is the mother of his child, and that is all she does in the second half, which is really disappointing. Characters really come and go, like Aubrey Plaza, who plays the fantastically named WoW Platinum. What a name. She disappears for like an hour, I would say. She has so little to do other than stand around. And then she's like, okay, sex scene time. And then after the sex scene, she's relevant again until John Voight kills her. The characters it chooses to deem as important briefly is so confusing. And you make an interesting point about the satellite, because the satellite, I thought, I was like, okay, this is an old USSR satellite. So that in itself is another empire that attempted to build and is now literally coming crashing down. That's really interesting. But then it crashes and then we barely ever hear of it ever again. We don't feel the impact on the people who lost their homes. We don't feel the opportunity that Adam Driver is getting from that moment. And we spend so much time in this whole film with the rich, with the 1%, that it all feels so detached. I didn't feel a single thing for any characters in this film, because the film never gives me a reason to care, because it's all just rich people throwing around their money. I feel some sense of irony and I feel some sense of happiness when I see them demise, but when I see them succeed, I'm never like, yay, Megalopolis by the end. I'm just like, what was the point, dude? Yeah, well done. We can now basically go on escalators. That's what they invented. They invented escalators. Well done.
Yeah, I know what Francis Ford Coppola was saying about, like, we can build a utopia, but doing technology like that, moving escalators or something like that, it just felt very cartoonish. There was no impact. There was no character development, like what characters could learn. Like, for example, oh God, a lot of things were happening in this movie. There was one bit where Adam Driver's character was found out sleeping with someone.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what's her name?
That was a plot line, but then it just finished in 5 minutes. That
yeah,
was a plot
Vesta.
Line, and I just don't know what's going on. Was it to show social media? Why do we have to add so many unnecessary things to the story? They try to talk really intelligent, by the way. They try to talk really intelligent about, you know, building a utopia, talking about mankind, about a history. They were just giving us so much information. It just felt very overwhelming. I know what they're trying to do with, like, working around with philosophy about Marcus Aurelius, but they just kept repeating Marcus Aurelius in one scene.
They're like,
what's your philosophy?
What are
you telling us?
Yeah, I'll tell you what my philosophy is. This is a quote from Marcus, and I'm going to use this quote against it. It was just, like, there were times in this film when it just, to coin Mark Kermode's phrasing, felt like cinematic equivalent of teeth being pulled. I'm just sitting there and I'm like, God, this is dry. And it's so nothing. And again, I don't care about any of the characters. And I think that visually, this film is so striking and so ambitious. And, you know, just like the film itself with all of its themes and those moments where the themes come through, it's so ambitious and it works so well. There's some really great stuff. Like, there's a bit where they kind of go to the seedy part of town and there are moving statues, and there's some really great stuff with lighting. And there's a bit where, like, there's like shadows cascading onto skyscrapers. And there's almost like, because the CGI isn't amazing, but that almost feels intentional and it almost kind of adds to the reality of the film crafts.
Yeah,
and I think that would be so good with a better narrative or with a tighter narrative, because the narrative isn't necessarily bad. It's just kind of in really strange hands, and it's all being narrated by Lawrence Fishburne, who's like, yes, and you see Caesar, actually, he saw his kingdom die, and it's like, oh, right.
Yeah.
Hi, Lawrence. Good to see you again. The whole thing is so very, very strange. And it reminded me of Babylon, actually, because Babylon wasn't a very loved film, and we loved it. And what I found in Babylon was some really, really interesting characters who I could really believe in and I could really empathize with. And the way that that film constructed the film industry of the time, and it was done with such practicality and such tenderness, I thought that was all fantastic. And it's really the fact that I could connect to those characters is the reason why Babylon works so much more for me than Megalopolis does. There's actually a sequence in Megalopolis that reminded me of Babylon. Babylon at the end, obviously, we have that whole bit with all of the movies throughout time, that brilliant montage. They do something similar in this where they show Hitler and they show book burnings and they show various pictures of war with the American flag. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, this could be so good. This could make such an interesting point about power across time. And I feel like that's the point the film is trying to make in general, but it just falls flat. And yet I can't stop thinking about it. I can't stop considering all these things that the film is doing, for better or for worse. And in many ways, that's exactly kind of what I want, and maybe exactly what Francis Ford Coppola wanted. A conversation to be sparked, and thoughts to be sparked, and feelings to be sparked. And I can't call this film a total disaster, because it is kind of fascinating in that sense. Yeah. So much of it's wrong, but its wrongness is almost the most compelling part.
Yeah, you know, you just don't want to look away from it. You just feel like, it's just the sense of the imperfection. Is it trying to replicate real life? Because there's a lot of imperfection in real life. Because, you know, when you look at movies and then you think about, like, what is the perfect movie ever made?
Back to the Future. Parasite. Also Parasite. I can't argue with that. Parasite is phenomenal. Yeah.
Well, Back to the Future, that's like the perfect film of all time.
Yes.
But again, when it comes to films that we love, some of them might not be perfect, like Space Jam or films like Megalopolis. You know, those films we look into and we're like, why is that fascinating to us? Why do we like this film? You know, what you said, like, it sparks us a conversation, like, you know, what do we like it? It's just reminding us about, like, the art of, like, what is the art trying to say? And it did. It did say something. But there's a lot of loose ends, a lot of weird character moments in the story that didn't make sense. It's very Shakespearean. And how long was the film, Tom?
I think it was about 2 hours, 20 minutes-ish.
Wow, that did feel like a really long time.
It did. It really did.
It did.
Yeah, it's about the same length as The Substance, which, you know, The Substance goes by really fast and it's really, really well paced and plotted. And if you take two things away from this video, number one is go and watch The Substance. And number two, John just compared Megalopolis to Space Jam. And that's funny. That's brilliant.
It's like when you look back at something, it's like interesting. Like,
no, I get you.
Yeah, Megalopolis, a movie. You know, it's crazy. Like, to put this into perspective, I know we talked about this repeatedly. This film was so long, stuck in pre-production in such a long time. How did he want to envision this movie? And this is like a passion project, like $120 million. Everything goes into it and you can do whatever. That's like a filmmaker's dream, essentially. Like, you don't want to be bombarded by studio executives trying to tell you the movie should be like this. No, the movie should be do like that. And again, it just gives us that idea of the liberty of doing anything in a movie. That's what the movie's trying to tell us. There's no right or wrong when it comes to storytelling. It doesn't tell us that, but Francis Ford Coppola does tell us that kind of way. And it just gives me, okay, that is interesting. Why did he do that?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's not a great film by any means, but the quality of its ambition makes it stand out so much more than other big budget, you know, blockbusters. This is so much more valuable to me than something like Ghostbusters Frozen Empire or Argyle or Borderlands or Madam Web, any of those films that we've had this year that have nothing to say and there's nothing to talk about. Whereas there really is a lot to talk about, and I think that alone is admirable. So what are you going to give Megalopolis out of 10?
I'm feeling like a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say exactly the same. 5 out of 10. I just realized we didn't even talk about the scene with the speaking to the audience.
Yes,
It
oh my God.
didn't happen. It didn't.
It didn't happen. We wanted
No.
someone to go up to the stage. And yeah, it just felt very odd. Like, I wondered why he wanted to do that in the first place, to have like an audience participation in a very short scene, by the way. Was it a conference? Was it a Q&A? Was it something that
Yeah,
it was important to the story?
It was confusing, and it was strangely placed as well. And I mean, like, no doubt it's trying to push boundaries, but it's a bit of a weird one. Anyway, thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you enjoyed it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, we're returning to Gotham. It's Joker, Folie à Deux. A musical, maybe, or maybe not. Who knows? That's going to be interesting.
I don't know where the movie's going to go. I heard some reviews that it kind of looks like the same, but we're going to talk about our opinions at the end of the day. As you said before, loads of people didn't like Babylon. We did. So, yeah, movies.
You can send us an email at lasttimefilmpod@gmail.com. We'll be recording next Saturday, so let us know your thoughts on Joker, Folie à Deux by then, and we'll answer it right here in the podcast next week.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram at outoftimefilmpod to see our carnival thumbnails from St. Asphalt, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts, and you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to L. James May for the excellent theme, and Will and Phillips for vocals as always, and I think that's everything. I want to talk about like how insane we went to, like, with four movies. We kept seeing the same ads, the same trailers.
Oh God,
Smile
yeah.
2, we've seen Smile 2 more than hell. Any other person in the trailer.
Do you remember the guy from high school? He smiled at me. Oh, that,
I
that
am
what a, what a...
I am in control.
Yeah, Jesus.
All right, yes. Yeah, oh my God. Hey, can we
give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.